This is Gross Anatomy, where pop culture meets health culture. Let's get to it.
I think what we need to do is boost your confidence a little.
Is that all it is?
Yeah.
I need a confidence booster?
He needs tech confidence.
He's fishing. He's actually right now fishing for compliments.
That's exactly what it is.
To say we're so impressed with how tech savvy you are.
Yeah. Now you're talking, but I don't hear myself so well. Hang on.
Well, just in case anyone didn't recognize that voice, welcome, Lucas.
Thank you.
Welcome to Gross Anatomy. Thanks for coming on today with such short notice.
I love the name Lucas.
We're all doing great here.
My future son-in-law's Lucas.
Well, he's kind of already your son-in-law, isn't he?
Kind of already my son-in-law. Welcome to Gross Anatomy, everybody.
Welcome to Gross Anatomy.
Hi.
Today we have on Lucas. After suffering from irreparable damage to his digestive system, Lucas Kraft founded Wonderbelly, a better-for-you digestive medicine, along with his brother Noah, whose past experience included operating disruptive companies. They put together an amazing team of gastroenterologists. You think I'd be better at this after this many episodes? Gastroenterologists and pharmaceutical scientists to create Wonderbelly's first product, Wonderbelly Antacid. Thank you for being here.
Just so you know, it is a rough word, especially when I have to say gastroenterological.
That's even harder.
That one's a difficult one that I never get on the first run.
No, I mean, the beauty of this not being live is we could lie to everyone and pretend I got it the first time, but we're not going to do that because we're humans and we make mistakes.
Right. We love mistakes.
We love mistakes.
We learn from our mistakes.
Lucas, how do we know each other?
So we know each other through the amazing Rachel Samples.
She was a recent guest, so the people know her.
Oh, well, who doesn't know her?
Anyway, who doesn't know her?
She's got that star power.
Yeah, she really does.
Wait, so how do you know Rachel?
So I went to Syracuse with Rachel.
Syracuse.
Yeah, we were buddies at Syracuse, and then I'm from LA, so I, after Syracuse, moved back to LA, and she ended up moving out to LA, so I saw her a bunch.
What was your major?
I majored in music industry, which of course is the natural progression into digestive health medicine.
Tell us more.
Yeah. I mean, it's a story as old as time. But yeah, I always thought I was going to be in the entertainment music industry. And after college, I went into it. And it really wasn't my jive after spending enough time in it. And after exploring a couple other things, I really found I love creating things. And and so I just sort of naturally walked the direction of what I ended up loving waking up doing. And that's what led me here.
But you make
that's
it
awesome.
Sound so easy. There had to be some
I skipped a lot of stuff.
But my oldest daughter is why I know Allie. They were college. It's all about meeting in college. Today's episode is about, who you've met in college. Mm-hmm. So they were, what's the word? College mates? What do you call it?
We were roommates, kind of.
Oh, that's true. You guys even lived together. Yeah. In college.
We lived together.
Yeah. But my youngest is applying to colleges. And one of the schools, I don't even know why she applied there, but one of the schools she applied to was Syracuse.
Yeah, I don't know why she would apply.
I don't know. And
I'm
she
like,
got,
what do you mean? Of course she applied to Syracuse.
No, I know, but it's kind of random. I don't totally know why that was on her list, but she got in. And now we're wondering, should she consider going there? What do you think, Lucas? I know that's not what this podcast is about.
I've got a couple. So one is, I'm assuming she's a Los Angelino.
Yeah.
It's an interesting transition. I went in very naive thinking, okay, Syracuse, yes, everyone says it's cold, but I'll just wear a jacket. It is a different kind of cold.
Yeah.
It is a like apocalyptic day after tomorrow type cold.
Yeah,
there.
It's real.
Good reference.
Yeah. Good movie, by the way, Day After Tomorrow. I like that movie.
Yeah, great movie.
Yeah.
Citizen was that Jake Gyllenhaal?
Day After Tomorrow. Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Quaid. Mm-hmm.
And the girl from Shameless. What's her name?
Mm-hmm. I think that's her name. I like her. Yeah, that's her name.
That's her real name.
Yeah.
Would
you go there knowing?
It depends what you're going for, right?
Would you go there now? Would you, looking back, if you're going to college now, would you do it again? Would you go back to Syracuse?
It's hard to say because I don't actually know any other. I've of course visited friends, but I don't really know what the real college experience of those living at those college, going to those colleges was like. Yeah. And so, I would say probably I'd go back.
You loved it.
But yeah, I had a great time.
You found your people.
I found my people. Was it hard to find your people? It was actually only because I came from a very small school. I went elementary school, high school, not a lot of kids in it, and they were connected. So the people I was in kindergarten with, I graduated in 12th grade. Mm. So I'd known the same people for a very long time.
Yeah. And you had your people.
But then when I went to Syracuse is a massive school.
Right.
It's all that. And I came from a very liberal arts school. So it wasn't as artsy focused. That wasn't like the big priority. So it took me a while to find sort of that crowd that resembled the crowd that I had sort of come from.
How'd you find it?
Naturally, just sort of like, you go to parties,
parties you found it, not in class
and all the different, I feel like the first semester or 2 year at college, your focus is just meeting people and finding exactly how you fit in and all that. But the beauty was I actually started to expand outside of my normal friend group and really started to, the bubble I'd grown up in had sort of burst, and I was able to really sort of explore being in different environments and in different friend groups. And that was great. And
do you think some of your college experience birthed what you're doing today? Did it help you get into what you're doing or totally?
Yes, but in an indirect way. I think specifically my major, so much of what I learned in music industry was around marketing, and there's so much creativity in music marketing and just music and the arts and all that. Learning that, I've applied a lot of that to what we're doing at Wonder Belly, the company. It influences a lot of like how I look at things and being disruptive in different ways.
That should give the college students hope.
Yeah.
And then what was your hard pivot? So you're in music. You realize it's not for you. How do you pivot to Wonder Belly? Was there something in between there?
So I left and I worked for a couple companies and ended up in the product space and really found that I love figuring out what people love. It still applied to music. Like I love finding music that people loved and then championing it, being like, everyone should hear about this. And so my passion really came through because I was like, I love this music. I want everybody also to love this music. So naturally, I just want to
market
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like a natural instinct rather than a job. And that applied also to products. Is like I'd find a product and I'd be like, I think everyone should know about this.
Yeah.
And so I really am driven to wake up every day and try to show people this thing that I think isn't getting the attention it deserves. And what happened with Wonder Belly was I really wanted to do something. Well, it also came out of a need for me. Is like, I was like, this product doesn't really exist and I want it to exist. And for the longest time, I was like, somebody's going to do it. And then after a while, I was like, nope, no one. All right. Let me see what that would look like. And so we explored, but I really wanted to do something that I woke up every day loving just the environment and the world that I was in. It was something that I was interested in, connected to me personally. And it was something I believed in. That's like, those were the things I really needed to have. It couldn't just be sort of this opportunistic pursuit, because that is, it's difficult for me to like really put my heart into something like that. So when we were coming up with it, checked all of those boxes, and it truly did come out of like a, I'm going to create this for me, but hopefully other people also want this. And then,
it's amazing. And what is Wonder Belly for anyone who hasn't heard of it?
Yeah.
What products do you guys offer?
So Wonder Belly is a digestive medicine company. So we have multiple different products on the market. When we launched, and we're very new.
When did you launch?
We launched in 2022, late 2022. So we are really young. However, it's moved very fast, because what we did is it came from, I as you'd mentioned, I suffered from an eating disorder when I was in my teens. And because of so many stigmas and I'd never heard of another man experiencing an eating disorder, I kept it hidden for a very long time. And it progressed into my mid-20s. In my mid-20s, I ended up in ERs and doctor's offices because of the damage I was causing to my esophagus and, you know, my upper digestive system. And it got to a point where I finally was pushed into finding recovery. And I was able to recover from bulimia. However, I was left with a lot of lifelong damage I'd caused to my body. And so I was left at a really young age relying on over-the-counter medicines to manage symptoms. And you know, a lot of these are popular brands that we, you know, we've used, our parents have used, and their grandparents have used, and they're really reliable and effective products. So I was able to use these effectively for a very long time to relieve symptoms. However, in 2020, one of the products I was using, it's Zantac, it had to be recalled because it contained a carcinogenic ingredient.
Ooh.
And this is at the very beginning of the pandemic. And that, you know, I saw that article and it really scared me because I opened my medicine cabinet. It was a product I relied on.
Mm-hmm.
It was a shelf full of it. And I thought, you know, I never really, like, I implicitly trust medicine, but I never really thought about it in the same way that I've been conditioned to think about food, beverage, or even skincare, is like be a little bit, you know, more speculative about the ingredients, what goes into it. We're a little bit, as a consumer base, more knowledgeable about those kind of things. But we never really have applied that same type of thinking to a category like medicine, where it's just sort of like what it is what it is. There are no real alternatives unless you go into the supplement space. And I realized that, you know, the antacids I was using, they had ingredients that I didn't want to put in my body. There wasn't an alternative that you know, met the standards of non-GMO or, you know, clean label, all of those things. And there were a couple other things I was like, if we're going to be doing this, I'd like to also improve these things about the product that I've been using for so long. And so we created Wonder Belly, a clean ingredient antacid, and launched that. And it went unbelievably well. Apparently, I wasn't the only one who really wanted it. And so what we've done is we've just a few weeks ago launched our gas relief product. And the plan is to basically replicate the formula that we... Yeah, and with the gas relief product, we also, I have it here too, we also released a book that I wrote called An Adult's Guide to Farts, because a lot of what we do here is we try to destigmatize things, specifically digestive health, you know, normal bodily functions, things like that, and we think farting is great, so we want everyone else to know that.
Hot take.
Yeah, our goal is to basically provide an alternative, clean label medicine for digestive health, and do that for sort of every product category in digestive health.
I have 80 zillion questions for you.
And that's all. All right.
Yes. if you don't mind, I'd like to even take you back, if you don't mind. You know, you touched upon having bulimia. And normally you don't hear that that's necessarily a male, right? You don't necessarily think, oh, guys have that too. How old were you when you first started, and if you could think back, what kind of led you there, if you remember?
So, and I've got all these answers locked and loaded. I do a lot of work around eating disorder awareness. Actually, on Saturday, I'm going and speaking at a walk for NEDA, the National Eating Disorder Association.
That's great.
And so I'm a big proponent of talking about my story and all that.
Yeah.
And so I was 15 years old when I first developed it. And the, you know, the progression of how I thought about it is, I find to be sort of interesting, is it didn't necessarily, how it started isn't what it became.
Right.
So, you know, initially I thought I'd figured out this life hack. I didn't even know it was bulimia.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I was thinking about it at 15, because I had no information about eating disorders or anything. I was like, wait, I can eat as much of the food that I love and just basically restart and just eat it again and keep experiencing that and get that rush of dopamine every time, which, you know, when I explain it like that, it's like, oh, that doesn't sound healthy at all, but that's not how I was thinking about it back then.
Right.
And there was also this concern. I also suffered from body dysmorphia. So like, there was this huge fear that the consequences of, if I didn't purge, I might end up gaining weight. And that was terrifying to me.
Right.
So,
were you a chubby kid?
I wasn't, actually.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't. I mean, in my eyes, it didn't matter what I weighed. I always was like, I'm overweight. But in reality,
You were like an average size kid.
Average. There was nothing, no health concerns around my weight.
Were you an athletic kid?
Yeah. I played on my high school sports teams. And that's also the other thing is I was bulimic. Nobody suspected anything, not only just because I didn't match sort of the archetypal image of what somebody was, but I also wasn't extremely skinny or extremely overweight. I was just, I looked, quote unquote, I don't want to say normal because I don't think that word applies to how
like
people
average,
look.
Like average, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Or normal is kind of a bad.
You're a regular kid.
Like, too deviated from, you know, what weight you'd expect a 15-year-old to be at. But then as it progressed, it actually turned very much into a coping mechanism as stress. This is how I'd relieve stress. There was this like sort of aspect where when I would binge, I'd sort of black out in this way that it would just, anything that was worrying me at the time, it didn't worry me. My focus was fully on food. It was the cycle. But then the panic would set in about gaining weight. And then it started becoming far more about managing weight as a tool. And that's when it started.
Like the control,
really,
you think?
Yeah, exactly.
It?
Yeah. The control. And that, yeah, it wasn't just controlling my weight. It was controlling my fear is what I was really trying to do. And so it really started to get bad once it became this sort of tool I was using. And I remember when I found out that it was bulimia.
When did you realize? How old were you?
I was 15, probably, or maybe 16, but like.
When you realized you had bulimia?
When I realized it was bulimia, but I didn't actually realize it. My friend had to tell me because I started to brag to him about this thing that I'd figured out.
Wow. What a interesting friend move at that age. That's like, that's hard.
Very
as a
smart.
Teenager.
Is he still a friend?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. And when did you realize it was a problem?
Oh, well, I knew what the word was and what it is, but when he was like,
when did you realize you had a problem? I mean, when did
it
you
probably
realize?
Took a while because I wasn't convinced that's what it was because I was like, but I'm not, I don't fit the picture and it's not something that I can't stop. And it's something that I do because, you know, it's like, it's not that big of a deal type thing. It took me a really long time to, I think it was once it became a thing where I was, oh, I really should stop, but I can't, is when I was like, oh, wow, this isn't little, this is big, and this is a problem. And I probably knew it for a very long time in the back of my head before it really, I was accepting of this fact. And it didn't take very long, a year or so, until I was like, uh-oh, this is becoming a problem.
Right. And when did you start having symptoms that you started having?
Pretty immediately.
Really?
Pretty
reflux, immediately. Reflux and
reflux,
burning.
Yeah, because I'd completely... I had a hiatal hernia and completely just my lower esophageal valve, I just destroyed it. So it wasn't able to keep in gastric acid.
Yeah.
And so at a young age, like really young, a lot of people saw it as like a funny thing that I would carry antacids with me as a 15-year-old. They're like, what a kooky, quirky thing. But nobody really knew why. I knew why, but like nobody really knew, like, why is a 15-year-old so reliant on antacids? That's so odd.
Did your parents know?
No. Mm-hmm. No, it was a very long, until after I recovered, did I basically tell.
When you went to the hospital.
Oh, the doctors didn't even suspect it. Like it wasn't even one of the things that the doctor said, we need to ask you this. Because a lot of the things that we're seeing, you know, irritation, it's consistent. None of that came up.
Interesting.
They were just like, this looks like maybe really aggressive GERD or.
They were like so stuck in the archetype of like it being like younger women typically.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I knew, but I was so conditioned at that point to never tell anybody.
It was private. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that I was like. I wanna,
yeah, you're also, a teenager, like that feels
it
shameful.
It was a solution for
secret.
Me.
Secret.
Like,
yeah.
It wasn't just for the longest time, it wasn't a problem. It was a tool, it was a solution. And so if I didn't know any other way how to manage aspects of stress, how to manage this body dysmorphia and the fear that came from it. And so if that solution was taken away from me, I'd be left with a problem. And that was equally as terrifying. Mm. And so I just didn't know how to talk about it. Or if I said this, then suddenly, nobody would want me to continue doing it. And then finally, the thing that, and this is when I talk about eating disorders and get, you know, speak or talk on panels or anything, the thing that I always focus on is how important speaking up is. And that's why at Wonderbelly, we focus a lot on destigmatization. Is the first person I told was my wife, who wasn't my wife at the time, but it became clear, well, I'm going to be marrying this person. And so much of our relationship is built upon honesty and transparency and trust. This is such a big part of me that I'm keeping from them. Part of me had wanted to say it to somebody for so long.
Yeah, it was your secret.
Yeah, in a split moment, it just came out. I was like, there's something I need to tell you. And I definitely downplayed it because I was like, you know, I sometimes struggle with bulimia. And that, you know, that maybe took a total of 3 seconds. Technically, it actually took a total of about 10 years to finally get to that point. But the actual act took 3 seconds. And that changed everything for me because her response was amazing. It was a fantastic response. She's also a therapist. So now she's a therapist.
You were both becoming who you were going to be. It's so funny, you know, you sharing your story and her helping.
But she was just like, thank you so much for telling me. And we're going to figure this out. Like, this isn't something that's just going to go. Our goal is now to figure this out. And that's really what I needed is, A, doing it on my own wasn't working. And then B, the second I told somebody, I wasn't carrying this weight alone. And I was also sort of now held accountable.
To handle it.
Yeah. And so it wasn't just like this thing that only I knew about. And so that just that act sort of put me on the road to recovery. And that's why I'm such a big proponent of speaking up and just getting that one little thing out there, even if it, you know, if you can get yourself to just say it to somebody you trust or feel safe around.
That's good advice. And thank you for telling us as well. It's so helpful. I don't know our exact demographic of how many men are listening, but it is rare to hear of men who maybe admit to having eating disorders. I know it's not maybe as rare as we think to have them, but to talk about it.
For sure.
And I also was curious even in your like professional career now, do you run into that as well? Like, do you guys see that it's mostly women who listen to their body and realize they need this thing? I have guy friends who'll be like, oh yeah, well, like, yeah, I have diarrhea every time I eat this, but I'm fine. Like, they say it every time. And eventually you're like, oh, you might have like some sort of bacterial issue, or like, you know, like, it's like they brush it off. They're not used to it. So I at least have seen that. I wonder if you see that in your
field. So I love that you brought that up. It's something that I've been aware of for a very long time, because at parties, it became very clear. And this, I remember this very clearly, is in high school, at college, and anytime after at parties, if I talked about heartburn or I asked somebody, does anybody need Tums? Or if I pulled Tums out while in a circle of people talking, it was always women who were willing to say, oh, I have heartburn all the time. Or they also were the ones who had antacids. And it became very clear, I rarely did I hear men speak up about these things. And then you see it online with, there's so many trends on gut talk, and there's a trend on TikTok called hot girls with stomach issues.
But yeah, women are I've seen it
so much more, I want to say, like, courageous when it comes to being open about just talking about their digestive system and things that I don't think men have gotten to a place where they can openly talk about it. So when we created Wonderbelly, I very much know that it would probably resonate far more with women than men.
Well, you know, men are idiots. And, you know, I could say that as a man, you know. And
coming from a very smart man himself.
Yeah, we're idiots, and we're definitely much less in tune with everything, you know, but especially to a huge degree, our bodies, right? Where, you know, and I don't know if that's partly because, you know, women get their periods every month and, you know, and are much more in tune with their bodies. But it's also, I think, because men are idiots, you know, we're just idiots, I think, a little bit.
It could
we're cavemen,
easily,
you know?
Yeah. We, you know, it could easily just be a factor of this. What still lingers and is a big part of the reason there's so much stigma around men with eating disorders. And also, when it comes to eating disorders, the statistics around it, it's difficult to really verify just because it's so dependent on self-reporting. Mm-hmm. And are so much more unlikely to self-report. Right. So it's hard to get an accurate read. But statistically, it's changed over the past decade or so from, like, I think it was like 1 in 8 or something. And I have to go back and look at the exact numbers. So I'm sort of, don't But it was like 1 in 8 to now it's like 1 in 4 are men.
Yeah.
It's the reporting has gotten a little bit more accurate. So it's not as rare.
Or a little bit more honest, maybe. Honest, it's like, yeah, I bet you. I think that also maybe your story is an example. I think men are a little bit just more oblivious. They may not know that that's what it is. Women are so trained to look at themselves.
Well, and I think
for
I
better
think
or worse, you know, guys don't.
Yeah, like toxic masculinity.
That
actually is like, if you're a man, you, this is no pun intended, you stomach through.
Yeah, you have no, you're too tough to have medical issues.
You white knuckle whatever you're going through, whether it's emotional or physical, because any sign of weakness is emasculating to a degree. Mm-hmm. And that makes you less of a man, is messaging that we've gotten, you know, it's John Wayne era. And it's still like, is around today that I think you see that like generationally it's I think getting less and less. I think, you know, millennials and Gen Z, you're starting to see these gender roles and lessen like what people are, the expectations people have on like how you should behave due to your gender, I think is changing, which is fantastic.
I have a controversial thought, but I want to talk about Wonderbelly more. But to some degree, we as a society are normalizing a little bit eating disorders. And I'm curious what your thoughts are. You know, everybody talks about intermittent fasting, like that's a good thing. And that's kind of like normalizing eating disorder a little bit. It's almost like, you know, the alcohol industry, which is normalizing getting drunk on some poison toxin or something like that. And I'm curious what your thoughts are.
So that's something I've thought of too. Now I'm somebody who has an eating disorder and struggles. Like once my eating disorder took sort of full form, it's really hard to just naturally have non-disordered eating. It's hard for me to look at food as I probably should. I have to put a lot more brain power to it and a lot more control and restraint.
I feel like it's almost like less control. I think that people get so controlling with food that it turns into disordered eating.
So
whereas like intuitive eating would be.
There's so many different, like the funny thing, not funny, but the thing about eating disorder recovery, which is really interesting in comparison to other recovery from like addiction or alcoholism, is eating disorder recovery, you have to engage in sort of the source of your addiction
trigger.
Or your trigger on a daily basis. So it's not this black and white, like if you are addicted to heroin or something, it's you're either doing it or you're not. And abstinence doesn't apply to eating disorders because that is an eating disorder in and of itself. And so I think that, you know, all these trends, I think that there's a population of people who can take those on because they aren't susceptible to eating disorders. And this is not, I'm not a professional. This is my own personal opinion. I think that, yeah, maybe they can handle them, but I think that there's a very large population that it could start to really, the line gets very blurred. Where is this just restrictive eating to the point where it's unhealthy? And what is the intent here? Is it being driven by to have a healthier lifestyle? Is it being driven by vanity? Is it, and I think there's a lot of different things you need to explore.
Is it for you? Is it for others? Yeah. Where does that line gets really blurry, I think, with those kinds of things.
And so I would say
I got to interrupt. I think I have an eating disorder. I think I've always also, you know, I'm coming out here to you guys. I think so many of us do to varying degrees. Obviously yours, you know, caused you significant harm and hopefully you're okay. It's an interesting spectrum of stuff.
Yeah. And what I think there's a large part of disordered eating. I think a lot of it is self-defined. But I mean, our society has done an awful job when it comes to teaching what proper eating looks like on so many levels. I always recommend just, if you even have a question, find a professional, a dietitian, nutritionist, a gastroenterologist, and talk to them about what they would recommend instead of just trying to sort of figure it out on your own. But yeah, I mean, it's so common and, you know, on varying degrees, but I'd so appreciate you like speaking up. Do you want to talk a little bit more about what that looks like? If you don't, I
you know, for me, it's even though, you know, I grew up as I was a chubby kid, you know, right. I was a husky. So I used to have to, back in the day when you went to a department store, there was actually a section for, quote, huskies. There was a husky.
Wow. That's wild that was the name.
I went to go shop in the husky department of Barney's because they had a good husky department for like suits and things like that. Yeah, but it's, you know, for me, you know, I'm a stress eater, you know, so when I'm stressed, I eat. And when I'm not stressed, I don't eat as much. And I'm definitely, you know, I have kids. So if the kids leave food over and I'm stressed, you know, I'm finishing their food. The crazy thing these days, you know, we've talked about it on a few episodes too, is this whole Ozempic thing. That's a whole other thing to think about. And who knows if that's going to start, you know, because one of the major side effects of Ozempic is significant reflux.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe Ozempic's good for your company, for Wonder Valley, you know?
We talked about it because the funny thing is our stance is pharmaceuticals benefit so much from people's pain, and we don't want to take that stance. We really do want to try to teach people ways to avoid getting reflux. Because if there's a world in which they don't have to rely on medicine, that's sort of like our perfect world. In a lot of our orders, we put in informational stuff on ways to avoid just getting reflux in the first place.
You don't want them to need your product, which is revolutionary.
It's just not a thing that pharmaceutical companies have ever hidden that they try to do for the most part. And that was one of the things I really wanted to change about the space.
Do you yourself use it?
Wonder Brother?
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah.
Regularly or as a kind of as needed?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, well, as needed, but it's needed regularly. So
right.
Because of the damage you did.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll always have GERD. Right. So, you know,
what is GERD for someone who doesn't
great. Know? GERD is gastroesophageal reflux disease. So really the way it's defined is do you get acid reflux multiple times in a week period?
Like after eating? Typically?
No, just in general.
Just and randomly.
So for me, it's not always tied to an activity or anything. It can happen whenever. You know, I can minimize it through diet and lifestyle things, but it'll never go away just because it's really a mechanical issue.
Although I could get a little controversial and theoretically it could be treated, you know, depending on your, you know, what's causing your GERD, maybe with a surgery.
So that is the one thing. Yes, that is a thing that.
You forget I'm a surgeon here, so
right, no.
He's always ready to solve it with surgery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Although I don't totally believe that, but surgery is the cure to things.
I've heard multiple things. I don't want to like speak good or bad about it.
Yeah.
It's not something that I personally, it's not an option for me at this moment. Like, it's not for me.
Yeah.
But I do know people that have gone that route.
Well, one, I wanted to say, Dr. Cohen, thank you for sharing and opening up to us. I know we've talked about what sounded like disordered eating in the past when we talked about Ozempic, because I remember you talking about your childhood. And I think now I remember the husky section coming up, and I'm sure that left an impact as it would on any kid. And I do think it's interesting with the way that people control eating now, whether it's via Ozempic or intermittent fasting. I think if you're thinking about it all the time, that's kind of a sign. I mean, I've been there as like a younger woman, or had friends who you can tell it's like they're so focused on not eating or eating or what they're eating or what they're going to eat later, you know? So I think it's healthy to just check yourself and say like, am I intuitively eating? Am I stopping eating when I'm full? Am I eating when I'm hungry? Those things, it's the goal for everyone. So
I was just going to make a quick plug is that NEDA, the National Eating Disorder Association, actually does have an online tool that anybody can use, which is a series of questions that you walk through on. And it helps sort of, it's not diagnostic, but it helps let you know, you should probably look at some resources to, you know, it'll help guide your understanding of where you sort of stand in terms of ordered, disordered eating.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about me is, you know, one of my partners actually listens to our podcast, and he always says to me, you know, Jason, you reveal a lot about yourself on this podcast. That's not for me. I wouldn't be able to do that, but I'm going to reveal more stuff. So I've been on and off Ozempic, and I've been off it now for a couple of months. My wife doesn't like me on it. And I actually said to her the other day, I'm like, I want to go back on it because I feel like I like the way it controls
your appetite, not just, or what?
Yeah, appetite. I eat less, and I actually feel a little differently on it, which I don't know if it's psychosomatic or something, but I...
You feel better mentally or what?
Yeah, something. I feel like a lot of my... And I don't know if there's going to be truth to that, because smokers supposedly smoke less on Ozempic. And so I think there's also some kind of craving reduction, you know, total body, you know, OCD reduction to it too, which is interesting. And I don't know if it's a real thing or just a cause and effect, but, you know, my wife said no, she doesn't want me on it. So
we listen to the master injector. She's
the
truly
boss.
In
if
charge.
She says no, I'm not on it. The boss is Bernice.
The boss is the boss.
So at least for now, she's right. I'm not going back on it. But I did like the fact that I ate less. You know, the other funny thing is, you know, you say, Lucas, talk to nutritionists and that. We still don't really know, you know, we're still constantly, we as a world are still learning, you know, there's the food groups and what you should eat. And they talk about how many calories a day we're supposed to have. But I think all of that's wrong, you know, and we're still figuring it out. And I think nutritionists, a lot of them are, you know, are just going based on old teachings. You know, I think we as a society think we need way too many calories than we actually need. It's a mess. I think the whole, it can be a mess unless you're just lucky. What do you think, Lucas?
So I think so much of this space, especially anything sort of related to the digestion space, is still so much is unknown. So many people I talk to about their digestive issues is it's not easy to just go see a gastroenterologist and have it figured out. It's usually a long journey to figure out what exactly is going on, because the possibilities are endless. It's sort of this, like, it's not a black box in the sense that we don't know anything. We know a lot. But, you know, at Wonderbelly, we work with a lot of gastroenterologists, and they are very open about, like, we're still learning so much about the digestive system and all these things. And so much is case by case. There is no one thing fits all. It's
very
each
true.
Person yeah. has such different requirements. We don't think about stuff like that like we should, especially when it comes to, like, working out. And people think that any body type they can achieve, where, you know, your body is probably going to respond differently to working out than somebody else's body and that kind of thing. So
everyone's
that
unique.
That yeah, everyone's unique. And that's why I'm like, to me, there's no, like, normal. When I was saying, like, wait, the normal is that everybody's body is unique.
I've had a similar experience where there's kind of these blanket terms that, like, if you go to, depends on the doctor you have. When I was having some gut health issues, they kind of just always, either you have anxiety or you have IBS. And that's kind of it. And those are the two things you get, unless you really press or pay a really good doctor who I had. Then I switched to, I tried out Parsley Health, which I really recommend, because no one was really helping me figure out what was wrong. They sat with me for an hour. I've never had a doctor sit with me for an hour. First of all, that was insane. The first visit is an hour. Then I got hooked up with a dietitian, and then they ran all these tests and then found I had SIBO, and then helped me treat that. And heal it. But it just was like such a journey to every doctor saying, I mean, and I have countless issues in the past where doctors have said it's anxiety, but anxiety and or IBS, which what is that? Irritable bowel syndrome, irritable bowel. I just feel like it's so like band-aidy, like, yeah, you're irritable. I'm like, but what is wrong and how do I fix it? You know, there was no.
So internally at Wonderbelly, we call it the bad acid trip, is because for me, my experience was how to control my GERD and all that. So I had to try so many different things to find out how do I control the acid in my stomach. And so I had to go through all these different, I tried supplements, lifestyle changes.
Did you do the low FODMAP diet? I feel like everyone's tried the low FODMAP diet at one point.
I don't have IBS, but that is far more of a, that's an IBS particular thing. And we've created the bloat and gas relief. And
tell us about that a little bit more.
Well, that's a product that is very much used by people with IBS, because bloating and gas discomfort is a common symptom when you have IBS. Even though I don't suffer from IBS, I've been able to spend a lot of time with people who do actually study it. I have so much empathy for what people with IBS or IBD.
Yeah, your tummy gets to be like a balloon. It's like, yeah, it is really trapped in there.
And there isn't a clear guideline of how to do things. It's difficult, and it's probably very scary, especially at the beginning. So I have so much empathy for people who struggle with it, and it's really common. So the bloating and gas relief, which is really interesting, actually. You know, a lot of us are probably familiar with GasX. It's another one of those brands that has been on, you know, it's been on the pharmaceutical shelves for decades. For the longest time, I thought GasX was a product meant to help you stop farting. And as I got into digestive health, I very quickly learned that is not at all what GasX is. Despite its name, it actually...
Yeah, I thought the same.
Right? And I think a lot of people who don't actually, you know, struggle with, you know, gas cramping and bloating, they probably don't think any differently than how we think about it. But what it does, and our product does this exact same thing because we use the same active ingredient as GasX, is it relieves the gas inside your body. So basically gas buildup in your intestines, it helps release it, which usually comes out in farting. So if anything, GasX leads to more farting, which I can only imagine if you're like, well, I fart a lot, I'm going to take GasX, how disappointed you would be.
It's not the experience they were hoping for.
but
you need to, it's a relief. That's like pain and discomfort.
So relief. It helps sort of release the gas that has been sort of trapped. It breaks it down and releases it, or helps it release in your body. And that's why we came out with the big book of farts, is because, yeah, you might fart, you'll feel better. And if you aren't so concerned about farting, you'll feel a lot better.
Yeah. And there you go.
I have a random side question for both of you. I'm kind of intrigued. Do you guys fart in front of your partners?
Yeah.
You're like, do you have to say yes to be loud and proud at Wonderbelly?
It wasn't an always thing, but and she's not happy about how stoked I am.
How
comfortable I am. Yeah, I mean, yes. At first, no, but I think that's a big marker in a relationship, is when you'll let that first one rip, and then you're like, okay, how'd that go? How's everyone feeling?
Are we still together?
Are you going to look at me the same?
What about you, Jason?
I don't fart.
Oh, that's amazing. No.
Fantastic. So efficient.
Right, exactly.
So, he's a medical mystery.
Yeah, I get in trouble though for it, but I get in a lot of trouble every time I do it. But there's two things. I'm going to get a little silly but before we get silly, gas is two different things, kind of. You know, there's the sensation of kind of like belching gas, like upper gas, you know, that's kind of like pain and kind of the same kind of symptoms as acid reflux and all of that. That's interpreted as gas too, you know, stomach gas. But then there's colon gas, which is farts, you know, so there's really two different kinds of gas that people talk about when they talk about gas. And I just think it's worth knowing that or talking about that a little bit.
A lot of times.
But what's in Wonderbelly? I'm curious.
Oh, yeah.
What is Wonderbelly made of?
So Wonderbelly has Wonderbelly antacid, and it also has Wonderbelly bloat and gas relief. So Wonderbelly antacid is meant purely for heartburn, acid indigestion, sour stomach.
Which people call gas too.
They do. But I don't know if they should.
Yeah. Well, it is gas. Well,
the process of a lot of times acid reflux can come up with gas.
Right. But there's two different types of gas. There's gas, which is just air, because that's gas. Gas is air. So air within the stomach is gas. But it's not, you know, fart gas, you know, which is gas from the bacteria. Yeah. So they both really are gas. They're just different types of gas.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The FDA won't let us say gas on the product, but it is. So that is particular for heartburn. It's the exact same as Tums, Alka-Seltzer.
So it's calcium.
So the active ingredient is calcium carbonate. And then what we use for inactive ingredients is what we did is we found, which apply to clean label projects, guidelines of what is a clean ingredient. They're non-GMO, they're vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and free of like the 7 common allergens. And we try to use as little, you know, additives as possible, just so that it's what's needed for you to be able to take calcium carbonate.
That's awesome. Is it a chewable or swallow?
It's a chewable. And that's one thing that we really focused on is I was never really a fan of the flavors of existing antacids.
They didn't
me neither.
Leave a lot to the imagination. Things like just like assorted fruit. I was like, great. That's
yeah. So what flavor?
Very hard. So we have a lot of different flavors, and that's a big thing for us, is we want you to look forward to relief, because medicine historically has been something we've, as a population, accepted is going to be not a great experience. You know, cough syrup, a lot of our medicine is just, it tastes medicinal, which means it doesn't taste good.
Yeah.
And that doesn't need to be the case.
What's your favorite flavor?
So we have strawberry milkshake. My favorite is tropical fruit. We also have fruity cereal, lemon sorbet, watermelon mint.
Is there a mango?
So we just released that. The mango,
I forget, I tried
our gas release.
Okay. I was like, I know I saw a mango. We have, Jason, I'll have to bring you some so you can try it.
Yeah.
Do you want, you can reveal now. Do you want the antacid or gas and bloat relief?
Both.
Okay. Order on up. I'll bring it to Shabbat tomorrow.
There you go. There you go.
Come. Oh no, you're in Austin.
I'm in Austin.
I was gonna fly on in.
Well, I'm having a Seder on Monday, so I'm checking out.
Oh, there we go.
There you go.
But so that's the antacid, and then our bloat and gas relief, we use simethicone. It's the same active ingredient as GasX, and it's the exact same, you know, rubric in terms of clean label ingredients and non-GMO inactive ingredients. That relieves bloating, gas discomfort, pressure, fullness. We've got some really exciting things that we've been working on as well for the future.
Oh, and this is you. Who's we? You and?
Myself and my brother, we started Wonder Belly, and we have a fantastic team, as well as gastroenterologists and pharmaceutical scientists and an entire science team that they're the ones really actually responsible for it. I'll just be like, yeah.
But it's your concept.
Does your brother have GI issues also, or he's just...
I would say he is on the level of the average person's GI. He's got antacid, like he uses it, but not, I'm definitely a super user.
Right.
So I use it far more, and I have more issues than him, but he's definitely...
Everyone here and there. Yeah.
You made me think of, with your bulimia, that there was a recent show with Rose Byrne that I don't know if either of you guys watched. I don't know if it's still out, called Physical. Did either of you guys hear of that show or watch that show?
Yeah,
I didn't.
I heard about it, and I remember seeing posters for it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, 80s, you know, she's a Jane Fonda type, but she has this major bulimia issue. And you see that's kind of, and it, you just made me think of it. And I always tie everything into entertainment, but I think it might be an interesting show to watch for you in particular, to kind of see how they kind of tie that into that whole show.
The storyline.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
I'm always
really interested in how media sort of like portrays eating disorders and stuff like that. I always think
some of them don't do it very well. We know it's like really romanticized in some, especially like teen shows and movies. Yeah.
And you're usually given just a singular, it's as always a singular version of what somebody with an eating disorder, usually a Caucasian woman.
I'm thinking of To the Bone.
To the Bone.
Oh, it was Lily Collins. There was some criticism because she had struggled with an eating disorder for a lot of her life, and then did that role and was like, no, it didn't trigger me. And everyone was like, professionals were like, there's no way getting in shape for that role didn't trigger her. You know, there's no actual way for someone who's recovered to be able to play that role. So that was definitely a more problematic one. I'm sure there's so many others too.
I mean, the thing is like, and this is another thing that I talk about, and I've partnered with a couple different people, and next week I'm speaking at a school because it's to just expose people so you can see that everyone, it's, you know, eating disorders don't discriminate. So like everyone has the potential to be susceptible to it. There's of course certain demographics that probably have a higher propensity to be susceptible to eating disorders, but everyone can. And you rarely really see that in media, is like given different images of what that might look like.
Well, I have some quick last few questions for you because we've taken about an hour of your time already. What advice would you give to someone who is embarrassed about digestive issues, or I guess anything they need to approach digestively, whether it's gas and bloating, eating disorder, just like talking about it, getting there?
If it's something like gas and bloating and talking about it makes you uncomfortable, the only reason I would say try to get yourself to be more comfortable is so that if it is causing you issues, the actual gas and bloating, then being able to talk about it, you might be able to find a solution, especially mm-hmm. if you talk to a medical professional. That is the person I would say probably talk to them. If you're not, you know, talking about it with people, you don't need to. They yeah. might share some information that has worked for them. They also might share some awful information that is just horribly not advised. But
yeah.
But when it comes to something like an eating disorder, that's where I'm like, that's where I feel very strongly that it is really important to get comfortable saying it out loud. Mm-hmm. And of course, say it to somebody you feel safe around. But if you need to, it's such a scary thing to admit to yourself, but especially to admit to somebody else. If you need to, try saying it to a stranger. It might sound really weird, but mm-hmm. somebody that you can say it to and walk away from and know that there's no further impact of you saying, getting that out there. At least you said it out loud. Somebody heard you. You can actually sort of see the reaction isn't probably a violent one. It depends on the context. Of course, if you walked up to somebody at a bus stop and with
drama dump, yeah.
Yeah, just did that, they'd be like, excuse me.
I think that's great advice. I think that's great advice. Yeah, an Uber driver is probably a good person to say.
That's a good stranger.
And you can find that a lot of people want to help. A lot of people want, you know, are empathetic, but it'll start to diminish that fear. And to the point where you can tell somebody that is close enough to you to be like, now that I know this, I'm here with you. And it makes it a little harder to engage in it, knowing that it's sort of out in the world. It's a little bit more difficult and it gets you closer to recovery.
That's good advice. And then what about advice for an aspiring founder?
For an aspiring founder, I think the advice that I always fall back on is because like so many people you see on like LinkedIn talk about like all these different things that, okay, that worked for you in that very specific scenario. You can't apply that to everybody. But the thing that I think that can apply to everyone is if you are trying to be a founder or an entrepreneur, which as I said at the very beginning of this, I think it's unbelievably important to do something that you wake up wanting to do. And it sounds a little cliched, like do what you love and you never work a day in your life. That's not true. You still are working, but at least your heart is in it. And I think that comes through whatever you're creating. I think people can see that, people can feel that, and it really affects what you are creating. And it makes it so much stronger because it's something you probably know a lot about, something that means a lot to you. So you really care how it turns out. And you're not just creating it opportunistically. And so I think if you are starting something, make sure it's something that means something to you.
Great advice.
That's great. What about working with a sibling? How's that?
For me, it's been fantastic because, mm-hmm. and I mean, everyone has a different relationship, but it's allowed my brother and I to really grow a new form of communicating. We weren't close growing up, but we got really close as we became adults. Mm. And we built a really great level of communication as brothers. And now we're able to communicate differently as co-founders and sort of separate the two. And it's really grown our relationship in an amazing
way. Who's the older sibling?
He is. He's the
who's, older who's the boss? Of hard decisions.
He's definitely the boss of hard decisions. Yeah, definitely the boss of hard decisions.
Yeah.
And
then we usually wrap talking about something new we tried this week. Did you try anything new this week?
I did. I watched the show Girls 5 Eva.
Did Rachel tell you to watch that, or is that a coincidence? She's obsessed.
Another friend just told me.
What is it? You got to tell me. What?
Girls 5 Eva.
Have you seen it?
No. Have you, Allie?
Yeah, Rachel just got me to start watching it and she won't stop talking about it. And it's not new. It's been out for a while. That's why the timing's kind of hilarious. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. What is it in a quick, give me a quickie.
It's, Sarah Bareilles, right? And then Busy Phillips, a few other amazing actors. I'm going to forget the names of. Oh, Paula Pell, Renee Elise Goldsberry. They're a girls band that like grew up and kind of like lost their fame. And then I'm only a few episodes in, they're kind of like getting asked to do gigs again way later after they're like normal people again and like not used to being in the limelight, not making that much money. And it's just, it's really funny. It's really good.
It is. And I don't know if you're a fan of 30 Rock, but it's, you know, Tina Fey is producing, it's a lot of the same writers as 30 Rock. So you get that same type of humor, which I'm a big fan of. And my wife and I watch it and laugh really hard.
We'll be watching that tonight as well.
Yeah.
All right, I got to check it out. It kind of reminds me a little bit of, did you ever see the movie Music and Lyrics with Hugh Grant and Drew Barrymore?
Oh, I didn't, but I know of it.
It's a cute little movie too. He's like an 80s pop guy, you know, who's still trying to make it, you know, who just goes singing his old pop songs, you know, and he's old, you know. Mm-hmm. So it makes me think of that a little bit.
What did you try this week, Jason?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. I tried two daughters who got married this past week, which is bizarre, you know, Aviv. So my daughter has one of her best friends who grew up in our house, who's basically my daughter. She got married, and my daughter kind of had her Jewish ceremony because the big wedding is in June, but we didn't plan for the Jew part. So that's what I tried. Two weddings.
Two very Jewish weddings.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds really relaxing.
Yeah, exactly. But we're watching three body problems.
No, what's that?
It's the same guys who did Game of Thrones, actually, and it's based on a book, I think a Korean book. Did you watch it also, Lucas?
Yeah, I saw it.
Cool. We're not done with it yet, but it's kind of like end of world, sci-fi, outer space life. It's interesting.
Cool. Yeah. I saw Love Lies Bleeding with Kristen Stewart. It was really, it was pretty intense. And I went without Rachel because I knew she wouldn't like it. Because it was an A24 and I knew it would be kind of like gruesome a little bit. And there were some kind of, what's the word? Graphic scenes, like even just like bloody, you know? Mm. So I really liked it. I always know when I'm thinking about a movie, like the day after a lot, you know, like I'm like, oh, if I'm, otherwise right. I just forget about it. I was the next day, I was like, I'm like, that was kind of crazy. Like I was really thinking about all the scenes. I don't know that I'd watch it again, but I was really interested in it. And usually I don't really repeat movies anyway. So I recommend to anyone who's interested, don't go in wary. Mm. And then I tried this new app for a game called Wavelength. I don't know if you guys have played that. I didn't know they had an app version and it was really fun.
I didn't know either.
Yeah, I just found out. So if you like Wavelength, or even if you just like playing games with your friends and family, it was really fun. Obviously not sponsored. My brother just pulled it out and we all had a great time.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. That's all the new things.
Cool.
Thank you.
You know
again,
what I've been doing? One last thing.
Okay, tell us.
I've been doing more Wordle lately. Are you guys Wordlers?
I'm doing a great streak right now. I'm on the exact same page as you. I've been Wordling a lot lately.
Yeah.
I kind of fell off, so I need to catch up with you guys.
Yeah, that's new for me. Yeah. This was awesome.
This was awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your amazing product that I will bring to your house tomorrow, Jason.
Cool. And if you need, you know, surgeons, you know, by all means, you're more, you know, be more than happy to chat if you ever want a surgical opinion of stuff.
Ooh, love that. And well, seriously. As a hypochondriac, any amount of doctors that want to get into my phone book, I am all for it.
We're all for it. Well, thank you guys. have a great night and I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Gross Anatomy. As a reminder, Gross Anatomy is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.